So it's Saturday night, day after Wampra, and it's the 26th of July. So a rare experience for me, being the most senior monk in the room, and not going to another monk to ask permission to give the talk. But it's happened a few times now, and I think, wow, where did the time go? You know, just kind of remembering being a junior monk, just seems like a few years ago or something. Definitely wasn't a few days ago, but yeah, the Buddha, it really encourages us to reflect on how quickly time flies by, and the question whether we're spending our time well. And the other day, it was just yesterday, Ajahn Yanako gave a wada, and he focused on patient endurance and renunciation as being key aspects of sort of the skillful traits one can really work on and work with to keep one in the robes for a very long period of time. And so I've been reflecting on that, because in his talk he identified something that it's hard for one to see or perceive when one starts this practice and then sees others who have been practicing a while. And so I think it's just about 2 months, I'll be coming up to my 20th year of when I moved up to Redwood Valley, and then within a couple more months moved into the monastery. And so that's a long time, you know, in my life, just thinking, wow, that's not quite half, but it's getting there. And yeah, like that, the expectation I had when I was a junior monk and then seeing senior monks, it was like, it's interesting to think about that. Like, oh yeah, I really had quite a lot wrong, because my expectations were often filled with, as Ajahn Yanako was talking about, this incredible enthusiasm. And I was just ready to ordain. I was ready to go for it. Sold all my earthly belongings and really shut my life down, and just came up to the monastery and was going for it. And often I can have a lot of anxiety. So I was fearing, like, oh, am I not going to make it? Am I not going to be able to ordain? Will they find me out and find out I'm just totally unsuitable? And I remember one of the, I can't actually say it. It was I was trying to remember the combination to a lock. And he used the combination, and he said that it's this number for, I can't really say this without revealing combination, but basically he said it's this number, which are the, gosh, I can't say it. The other number though, he said, it was a higher number. And he said, and that's how many years it'll be before you can actually ordain. And that wasn't very nice. But I remember the combination, so that was helpful. But that was, you know, and I just remember, like, I could be, and I can still do this, but I could be really critical of senior monks and just say, like, oh, these guys, how can they not have their act together? You know, like, they've been doing this for so long, you know, they are huntsmen now, and what's wrong with them? And, you know, I'm so filled with aspiration, and, you know, I'm just going to go for it, and maybe I could be a stream mentor in 5 years. Whatever. So that kind of perception, like, it did, Ajahn Yanako was talking about this, how it, like, it kind of keeps going, and then you know, especially one becomes an anagarg, so, all right, I'm an anagarg, I'm in now, you know, I'm in white, and then oh god, now I'm the kitchen manager. And so that, for me though, that was like, I was tenaciously holding on to, I did it for a year, I was like, I'm gonna do this well. And so there was that kind of sense of learning about grasping and what wasn't so skillful. But then it's that more, it's like, okay, now it's the year's up. Now I can become, oh, everything's going to be great. Now I'm going to be salmonera. I'm not going to be kitchen manager anymore. It's great. As soon as I didn't become kitchen manager, then I was like, I don't have any control of the kitchen anymore. And so, but then it was like upatthakking and suffering around upatthakking is attending to a senior monk. And I was suffering around that, whether I was doing it well or I didn't like the monk I was attending to, and then being, you know, kind of bottom on the rung, and all this stuff's coming up, but still that enthusiasm was there. It's sort of like, I'm going to do this. And then learning all the chants, a lot of chants that year. And so I just remember that momentum and how much that carried me and how much I assumed, like, well, I'm just going to keep having this momentum. Just, you know, 20, 30 years, I'm going to be just going for it. And then becoming a monk, and then there's more. You learn the Padimokkha. So I like threw myself into the Padimokkha my first year. And it was just that kind of pushing and trying to study, trying to learn many, many different things about being a monk, reading through the suttas, reading through a lot of our own like particular tradition, teachings from the Thai tradition. I remember like also obsessing about going to another monastery in my third year, like spending hours just on the walking path. And I'm like, when I go to this monastery, oh, it's going to be so great. And just the stupidity of that, because I was already in a monastery. So, you know, just kind of learning about that and really remembering that, remembering what that's like, because I see so many of the junior aspirants here training, and but also sometimes that edge that I had as well, like, you know, that kind of feeling of like, why don't these guys get it together? So sometimes I feel like that. I feel like, I mean, it's not a paranoia, but it's like, you know, I'm wondering like, oh, this is Chunda, can you just get it together? And it's interesting because after a perspective of 20 years, whatever, even no matter what happens with the practice, like, yeah, that's a chunk. And it's been, I've been thinking about it lately and just also like what Ajñānika said around that perception and what it's like, because it does, that enthusiasm, it dries up. It just, I've never seen any monk who's like, I'm on fire with the Dhamma. I was like, wow, you're like 30 vasa and you're still saying that every day. That's amazing. So we have to keep ourselves not necessarily on fire, but we have to keep ourselves going. And this isn't just for monks or nuns. This is for anyone who's engaging with the Buddhist teachings. And we talked about this over tea a bit and what that really means in certain ways. And it's not something that is easy. You know, one of the things the Buddha said is this is the most difficult thing one can do. And there are some people, rare people, very rare people, where it's not that difficult. And for various reasons, usually what we would say is their past karma, their past lives, they, in no short time, they actually may have realizations and enter on some level of enlightenment. But I remember a teacher who was talking to me once about that, and he said, you know, you can't, you know, you don't know. I mean, he was being very personal. You don't know what I went through in my previous lives. So, and he wasn't claiming that he knew, but he said, you know, you can't think about that from yourself. You know, each of us is an individual. You have to start where you are. And so each of us has our own propensities, and we're finding ourselves wherever we are in our particular practice, and we're dealing with our own obstructions. And it's silly to kind of think like, why do I have to deal with these obstructions, and why can't it just be easier for me, and woe is me? So really we are finding ourselves each day like, this is how it is. This is what we're going through. But we always have a choice in what we're doing. We always have the potential to try to influence ourselves through right effort towards figuring out what is the best thing for ourselves. What is the most wholesome way that we can engage with the Buddha's teachings? And so what Ajñānika brought up was, he was talking about patient endurance, and that was one of the key aspects and something that Lumpo Cha talked about a lot. The Buddha spoke about as sort of supreme, as a supreme practice. So we do need to be very patient with ourselves and patient with this practice. And when things aren't going well, that's not a time to give up, even if it's years of that. Even if there's doubts that come up and if there's ways that we feel defeated, we can still know that. I mean, there's, you just bring up Angulimala, who murdered 999 people. It doesn't matter whether that number is super accurate or not. He killed a lot of people, and he became an arhat. He came fully enlightened. And that's an incredibly surprising but very inspiring story. That even with something that would seem like it would be an absolutely obstructive comic situation, you know, not comic comedy, but, you know, having the karma to have killed that many people, the actions that would be a very negative results. But still, he was able to overcome that. And so we need to kind of remind ourselves. Sometimes we need to, some of us will read biographies of monks who've really triumphed over many great difficulties. And so we're kind of needing to encourage ourselves. And this is also an encouragement towards those people who are new in the practice. Like, the time will come where you don't have that enthusiasm, where you are not, maybe you're plateauing in your practice, or things have become boring, or you feel negative about things. And Lumpur Samedo sometimes talks about this, because sometimes we rely on inspiration and we think, oh, this is what's so important for me. I'm just so inspired and everything's working so well. And that's great. That's a good thing. That will aid you in your practice. But also it's important to be prepared that this is just, that's just a sort of emotional state. You know, it's something that fades. It's impermanent. And even we might say that, like, having several like really good meditations or insights, those are also something that will fade, something that may change for us, where we might have dry patches or times where the practice becomes very difficult, or there's just very little progress. And so it's important for us to prepare for that in a way, to know, like, okay, this is how it is now. This is how I feel about things now. You know, we often see Anagarikas come in here and they're just like, yeah, this is it for me. I'm ready to spend the rest of my life as a monk. And then, you know, and then the conversation comes like, why are you leaving after 6 months? I mean, didn't you make a promise to commit to be here for a year? And yeah, well, that was how I felt then. But, you know, I just don't think it's good for me anymore. And my own sense is like, well, but making a commitment's important, just as something that we do. We kind of like, what does that mean then when we break that commitment? It's okay, but it can mean problems for us later on if that just becomes a pattern in our life, or it has been a pattern. Then sometimes sticking with a commitment, even when things aren't working well, is important to try to do, just to work with that, to see what it's like. And especially, you know, as a monk making these particular vows, I would say the same thing, that most of us can work through the difficulties that we have, but it does take some time. It takes some working through difficulties. And really what it takes is patience with our effort to try different things. And also the, not just ingenuity with that, but a willingness to say like, okay, if there's a feeling of just hitting one's head against the wall and continuing to do that, then, you know, maybe we need to kind of open our eyes and see like, oh, I didn't realize there's a door to the right of me. And it's very easy to see that if we just keep going in the same direction. So, and that's very, very possible for many of us, because if something has worked for a long time and then it stops working, we might just think, well, if I just keep doing it, it'll work again. But that's not necessarily the case. So oftentimes we need to really figure out for ourselves, like, how can we instill our own confidence within, so that we feel very not only confident, but competent in trying to work out these problems for ourselves. And so it's like, it's kind of undoing patterns. It's undoing the way that we do things and seeing them very clearly. And that's hard, because when we get into ruts, then it can be very hard to kind of get out of that. I mean, that's what a rut is. It's like a wheel that gets stuck into a, you know, a particular rut or a channel in the road, and then it can't get out. It just is stuck in there. And it takes a lot of effort. You know, if you actually have to pull a cart out of something like that, it takes a lot of effort to do that. But it might seem easier, well, I'll just stay in this rut. It's a bit easier to kind of just keep going and doing the thing I know how to do, even though it doesn't seem to be getting me anywhere. So that's an important aspect to really learn and practice when we really want to try to challenge ourselves. And that's not easy to do, because the tendency as human beings is to just kind of go the easy route, to go the easier way and not bother. So it's, you know, it's kind of like, we just had some guests here and they were very nice, but there were some fleas that started attacking one of the guests. And I haven't actually had this problem here, but they were just in this one place where he was staying. And so they were just jumping all over him, and then they were riding on him to his room where he was staying. So then he was getting him in his room. And so that was just too much for him. So he decided to leave. And I thought to myself, oh, it's too bad. You know, sort of like, right there was a good opportunity to see, like, okay, how can I try to live with this? And of course, if we get into a situation where it's harmful for our health, we have to assess that for ourselves. You know, maybe, for example, he wasn't able to sleep at all. You go through it was only one day, but anyway, you go through a couple of days that you're like, I can't sleep. And it's okay. This isn't good for my health right now. I'm going delirious. At the same time, I remember a seminary who came here. She was staying for a while. She had come here. No, I'm sorry. She later became a seminary. When she came here, she was still a laywoman, and she was staying in a kuti, and she was just up all night with these ants just crawling all over her all night long. And she was saying she was, I said, after a couple of days of this, she mentioned it. And I said, I was a guest monk at the time. I said, have you tried just brushing them out? She said, oh, I didn't think I was supposed to do that. And I said, oh, what do you mean? Oh, I was just trying to live with it, trying to work with it. And I thought, oh, that's pretty admirable. That's pretty gang. I wouldn't do that. But yeah, that was, maybe it wasn't quite the right way of thinking about it. Certainly the Buddha would encourage us to remove those ants without killing them. But it was an interesting way of thinking, like, okay, just Auton, just trying to work with this very difficult situation by living with it. And again, it might have not been the exact right perspective on the situation, but it was a good way of thinking about it, rather than just like, I'm out of here and leaving the monastery because there's some ants that were bothering her. So we're needing to kind of put ourselves to the test a lot of the time. And, you know, when the Anagarikas first come in here, it's not easy. I mean, there's a lot of things that are pointed out. And, you know, I think it's pretty easy to like the monks that don't point out things to us and not like the monks who are kind of saying, hey, maybe you should do this differently or that differently or whatever. Because there can be a feeling of like, well, I want to do what I want to do. You know, what I want to do. And so we kind of come up against these obstructions. And it's always that kind of like, okay, how can I let go of this? How can I see a way through with Dhamma, you know, rather than through my own desire of how to handle a situation? So I was just thinking about an example that happened just today. There was something I caught myself with, which I thought, oh, this is perfect to not move in this direction. Ajahn Yanako allowed Ajahn Guy and I to work on a Lumbur Cha biography reprint. And so we're working with a broker. So they are between you and the publisher. Anyway, we're working, and Ajahn Guy's doing most of the work. He's kind of redoing the things that need to be done to make the book work within our sort of budget and make little changes that we need to make for this. And so we have a fund that's already dedicated to it. And I was like, all right, well, just maximize. We'll get all the books. It's just specifically for that book, so I'll just get the exact amount of how much those funds are for, and we'll be done. We'll clear it out. I always like to kind of have something like that cleared out. And then I sent it to Ajahn Yanako, and I said, yeah, the right thing to do is, you know, he's told us to go with this. I need to run this by him, make sure everything's good. So finally we're done. I said, this is how much I'd like to order. And I asked the board we still need their permission, even though we have the full fund. And he said, oh, that's seems like a lot of books to order. What do you mean? And so I'm thinking like, well, we're just clearing out the fund. Like, we're going to order them all. And it was like 2,500. And I was very excited because it was like, I looked into ordering it from here and it was like $250 a copy. I was like, that's insane. And then I got it down to like 10 printing in Asia. So I was super happy, but that's another defilement. So anyway, he said, that seems like a lot. How about 2,000? And I thought, well, but that, we're not going to have much left in the fund. I mean, it's supposed to be dedicated for that. And so he also asked me why I wanted to order that much. So I started to explain it. And I said, okay, well, there's these reasons and da 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 da. And I said, but we could do 2,000, but these are my reasons for wanting 2,500. And then I thought, no. There it is. There's the defilement. There's the tendency is like, there's a desire I have. I'm just going to push through it, get what I want. And I can see the writing on the wall. I can see it already there. Like Ajahn Yanako said, how about 2,000? And the respectful thing and the way of also tempering the defilement is to say, sounds good. You know, just like, okay, great. Doesn't matter about there's going to be 5,000 left. That's not going to cover enough for a minimum order. And then there's going to be inflation by the time that we, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I just, I thought, okay, just write that. So I say, shall I just request the UC from the board for 2,000? This is how much it's going to cost. And I don't know what happened to the email, but I felt really happy after that. So when we let go of our tendencies, when we let go of our, we identify them, and it's not like I'm like, oh, Chinda, you're such a terrible person. Why do you keep doing this? It's just like, okay, there it is. You see it. And then once I let go of that, I talked to myself. I said, this is not important. You know, 2,000, 2,500. What's important is my relationship with Ajahn Yanako, being respectful, not bowing to my own tendencies that are actually coming out of unwholesomeness to get what I want. I wanted 2,500. I wanted to get the account cleared out. I want. And seeing that and then that recognition, it was quite, you know, it felt quite good. It felt quite helpful. And then just to say, you know, I'm fine with 2,000. Let's do it. I also recognized that if I kind of thought like, actually like 2,000 is a lot and maybe it's too much, but I thought, actually, you know, this is a good compromise. He actually is thinking about this in the right way. Cause I thought like, that's a 2,000, that's like 850 page book, 2,000. That's gonna be a lot of boxes, but whatever, here we are. So that was just a little bit of a story to kind of recognize that we each do these things. We each have these tendencies and we do it with our own practice. We do it with our own lives all the time. They're happening. You know, we have to constantly be compromising. And admittedly, like when the Anagarikas come in, oh my gosh, that is so painful. Like, it's just like when my experience of being an Anagarika was just left and right, I was just really having to practice pretty hard with those kind of desires. And then people pointing things out to me and it happens less and less. And I definitely see a problem with that because I think my skill level on receiving feedback is not as good as it was then, because as you get more senior, it just, unfortunately, it just gets more isolating and there's a tendency to receive less feedback. It's not always because one is just becoming better and better. It can just be because that's a cultural phenomena in a monastery, and somebody who's quite junior might be quite afraid to point something out or say something. And so it's also important to recognize that and say, oh, I don't want that to be the case. Like I do want people to actually be able to say things to me and to point me in the right direction. So even just that little email, that was it. That was a great feedback. It was very helpful for me. And we can see that in many ways we are offered feedback in a monastery. That's a great advantage, because if we are paying attention closely enough, then when we say anything to another monk who we live with, we are actually receiving feedback from them. They will say something in the way that they're talking to us that is sort of like, you know, I'm not so sure, you know, like what you're saying is the right thing to do, or how we do it or whatever. And if we're bullish, if we don't really pay attention, we don't take that in, then we don't see it. We might, you know, and I can often be that way. And sometimes I just don't see when feedback is being given. And so it's very helpful, I would say, as an aid along this life, to be very sensitive to that and to really not hide from that, but to, you know, one of the things that is developed over a long period of time is just the ability to just not take it personally and to allow that in. So it's another aspect of living in community life and monastic life, but even just being being a Buddhist practitioner in any way, we want to try to be sensitive around these ways that we can see, whether it's getting feedback from other people or just from ourselves, just seeing like, where are we getting ourselves tangled? Where are we moving in directions where it's just the same habit in the same way where we're satisfying our desires? And over again, we need to measure that. We need to bring it up and keep that as a very honed skill that we kind of bring with us. It's a honed tool that we have, is kind of to keep looking for ways that we can see, like, how am I undermining my own practice? How am I undermining my own ability to see what the right thing is to do in a situation? And just kind of going the easy route out and following my own tendencies. So the Buddha points out in one of his teachings, following the practicing the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma. And that's a bit of a kind of, what does that exactly mean? But what it means is that we're not following our own selfish desires. We're measuring what it is that we're doing through the Buddhist teachings. We're saying like, okay, that this is not where he would tell us to aim in this particular direction, because I'm just satisfying my wants, I'm satisfying my desires, the unwholesome ones. And so when we practice Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, then we go against that. So I, you know, like last night, I haven't personally found it beneficial for myself after about 8 years of struggling with it, staying up late at night and practicing till 3 a.m. But there are others who do find that helpful, and some of them continue to do that. And I find that very inspiring. And that really is, I mean, there is not much else of a way to cut it that is really following Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, because the tendency would just be like, I don't want to do this, and this is exhausting, and this is unpleasant. And if it's unpleasant, it must not lead to the good. And so that's really the wrong way to see it. We have to see that sometimes there is dukkha that leads to more dukkha and dukkha that leads to the end of dukkha. Many of us have heard that for a long time. But that kind of dukkha that leads to the end of dukkha would be doing something like that and really putting our effort into it, and then finding that at a certain point we do gain an understanding, or we actually surprise ourselves with how well we're able to actually handle something that's quite difficult. Or we gain a lot of peace or understanding just in that practice. I mean, for if anything that it taught me is just like, it's not really a big deal if I ever have to stay up all night, just sort of, yeah, I've done it for so many years, it's not a huge deal. But we also, my encouragement to others was to actually try something new, which was, yeah, don't gather, don't go into a kind of a talking thing for an hour. See what that's like, see if it actually benefits it. And especially if my suggestion last night when I said, oh yeah, let's don't do a tea time gathering, just have some refreshments if you need them and then keep going. And my sense was, if for anyone that was like, oh, Ajahn Chunda, he's such a bummer. It's so fun. That's the funnest part of the whole evening. And he just destroyed my fun. Then good. I'm glad. Because that's the point. It's like, oh, okay, so you had a desire to have some fun. And, you know, like, what was that about? You know, is that what the aim is? You know, to have some fun, to have some entertainment. Obviously, some good can come out of it. You have a good Dhamma conversation and become inspired. That can happen, but doesn't always happen that way. And what's it like when you don't do that? You know, you try something else. So over and over again, we have this potential to challenge ourselves, to push ourselves. And believe me, after almost 20 years now of living in the monastery, it's hard. It's hard to kind of muster that strength up to kind of try something new. And I remember a teaching that Lumbur Panyawato gave to a monk who had interviewed him. He was with his mom at the time, and they were asking him, he's passed on now, but he was one of, I think, three senior Western disciples from Lungta Mahabua, who also passed on, but was one of the main Arahant teachers at the time in our more recent times. Anyway, he explained to this monk, who interestingly enough disrobed, and his mom is a bhikkhuni, has been a bhikkhuni for a number of years. That was interesting, but I digress. He said, you know, the monk was asking about like kind of getting distracted or not practicing and kind of not being interested in practice. He said, well, you have to be really careful about living in a monastery. And one of the things that you have to be very careful of is that you don't make the functions of the monastery the purpose of why you're there. So like going to puja is not why one is a monk or a Buddhist practitioner. Chanting and then like going and, you know, doing the morning chore and then engaging with like our work and having projects in the monastery and improving the buildings and making the land work in this particular way and having all of these kind of functions that we're doing in the monastery, that's not it. That can actually become what we're doing. Like, that's what I am as a monk. I am a person who goes to puja and does these things or fulfills a specific responsibility. I'm the kitchen manager, I'm whatever, just add the name in there. So He said it's very easy to do that, but that's, we have to not forget that. And it seems obvious, but it's, that's not the purpose. The purpose are to engage with the Buddhist teachings so we can be realized, we can understand the end of suffering and actually not be reborn again. And that's very different than just thinking that, you know, I am a practitioner or a monk or whatever because I do these certain activities. So in our minds, the activities don't take precedence, and they're not even that important. They're aids to us, but we have to keep remembering, like, no, that our, what we're doing is we are trying to really bring in like what the Buddha has taught us, so we can master those skills to help ourselves understand how we can alleviate our own suffering, so that we actually break through and we realize the end of it. And that is something that can definitely fall by the wayside. And one of the things that we do with that is we keep remembering, like, we have a constancy, a consistency with trying to be mindful, trying to bring in wholesome states, trying to understand where we're kind of moving in the wrong direction and rectify ourselves each moment. Like, that's supposed to be happening each moment. And it's understandable that it doesn't. You know, it is easy to kind of just fall off that bandwagon just each day, just that movement towards the Dhamma. But we have to keep bringing ourselves back. We have to kind of really bring ourselves back, get out, you know, dust ourselves off, get back on our horse and just keep riding. And each of us, we're helping each other by doing that for ourselves. And each of us has to kind of really rise up to that challenge in ourselves. And we can get in that inspiration from others and from the Krupa-jans and those that we live with, we're inspired by. But that only goes so far. We need to kind of keep pushing ourselves and challenging ourselves, you know, because that inspiration, that momentum, it definitely will die off at a certain point. And then we have to reinvigorate it or move ourselves in the right direction and discover all the ways that we can do that. So it's really trying to develop that tool belt and prepare for whatever is going to arise in our practice. So we're, you know, we're kind of essentially becoming like the true soldiers of Dhamma and really rising up to this kind of war against the defilements. And that tendency to kind of, yeah, just sort of coast along and say, you know, another rebirth won't be that bad. It'll be all right. I'll take it. But we got to not let that kind of tendency or thought set in, because we don't know what's coming next. So, yeah, there's just some reflections, and hopefully that was beneficial. If not, don't worry about it. Just keep practicing. Anyone?